Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. Pope Francis is wheels up from Cuba and headed for Washington, D.C. Earlier today, the Pope held his final formal event in Cuba at the Cathedral of Santiago. Today, he calls on Cubans to strengthen the bonds of family, which he called true spaces of freedom. The Pope is scheduled to arrive at Andrews Air Force Base at around 4 p.m., where he will be greeted by President and Mrs. Obama. The Pontiff's busy U.S. schedule includes a speech before a joint session of Congress on Thursday morning, an event you will hear live on WAMC, and a speech to the U.N. General Assembly on Friday. Here to discuss the Pope's visit is Brother Ed Coughlin, president of Siena College, a Franciscan friar since 1971. Coughlin holds a doctorate from the Catholic University of America, a master's from Boston College, and a bachelor's from St. Bonaventure. Brother Ed has been president of Siena College since November of 2014. Ed Coughlin, welcome to Vox Pop. And by the way, sir, thank you so much for taking this time and joining us. I appreciate it, and we're all honored by it.
Happy to be here, and I think it's a very exciting time. As you said, wheels up, and a lot of people are waiting to see what's actually going to happen when he arrives.
the telephone number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So what do you make of it, Brother Ed? Is this a historic moment for the United States?
Well, I think it's just very interesting that he selected to come at this particular time. There's been a long time meeting on the family in Philadelphia, and that's a topic that's very near and dear to his heart. He began a synod last year. It's going to continue next month in Rome, so that's a very important topic for him. And I think because he just published his encyclical Laudate Si on the climate and whatnot, and the opportunity to speak before the UN, and strategically there's going to be a meeting in Paris coming up soon, again talking about the climate and whatnot, so I think he again, he's shown himself to have a great, if you will, political astuteness in terms of being able to put himself in places where he's really able to be in dialogue with world leaders as a man of faith and as a man with a particular vision, and he wants to be part of the conversation.
Well, we have a group of visiting journalists with us today, and one question was, why do Americans like this Pope so much? I mean, I'm not exactly Catholic. I'm a Jew. I've loved this guy from the first moment, and I'm wondering, what is it that that is so compelling about him?
I think his genuine humanity and his warmth. He's one of these people that seems to be so comfortable in his skin that all the trappings or things that go around about these national figures and whatnot, he is very much of his own man. And I think he's just resonating. People resonate with him almost intuitively in terms of, here's a good man, and he's so genuine and so warm. So many of the gestures that he's performed since the moment he was appointed Pope, coming out on the balcony, bowing his head and asking the people of Rome, his diocese.
Drives his own car, simple dress.
Yeah, and after he was elected, he went back to the hotel, paid his bill, all these kind of things. And then other very important things that he's done, you know, going to Sicily to be with the families of refugees that had come from Africa and were drowned. You know, the places he's gone, he's really gone to the people on the periphery. And I think that is pretty amazing for a lot of people to think about. You know, he's always going to the places where things are very challenging and difficult, but he continually uses the word a dialogue and presence. He wants to be present to people.
Is he a reformer in the church?
Well, I think everyone's trying to figure that out. It's sort of like the $64,000 question. He's such a different style in terms of his approachability and whatnot, and his desire not to be so much caught up in what maybe was the pageantry of the church and things like that. And everyone's trying to read him in different ways. Is he a conservative? Is he a liberal and whatnot? And I really think he's trying to be a man of the gospel. And what has Jesus said to us? How can I live this out in this world? And you see in his own life the transformation from a young man in Argentina and, you know, dealing with the realities of a very different world. I think it's also very challenging for us as Americans because it's sort of like, you know, he didn't come here first.
Yeah.
When other places, he's comfortable speaking in Spanish. And so he will give his formal addresses in Spanish. And so it's sort of like, I think it's kind of jarring for many Americans. It's like, you know, what's going on here?
that's so interesting. And as he comes to the United States and is invited, I'm in love with this particular thing. Maybe I'm all wet, but he comes to the United States and he's invited to talk to the United States Congress as Netanyahu was. But he's invited by the Republican, sort of right-wing Congress. And he's not a right winger, is he?
Well, no, that's going to be very interesting. I think his encyclical on gospel joy has some real hard questions for some of our American economic assumptions. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a interesting place for John Boehner to be, for example, who is a Catholic and was raised a Catholic. And I'm sure it's a great moment in his life to be able to actually meet the Pope. But I'm not sure he'll be totally comfortable with the Pope's message as he brings some critique to our capitalism and its unbridled forms and things like that. So it'll be a certainly historic moment. And I've heard things about their giving instructions about, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that and whatnot. So we'll see what really happens.
So this country is really, I mean, see, I believe CNN put on a special channel just to cover the Pope. This has got to be pretty good news for the Catholic Church, which has had its issues lately.
Yeah, I mean, I think in just the incredible coverage that even his visit to Cuba has caused, and again, did he confront the regime down there and all these kind of things? He's preached his message. He's gone among the people. There's been a tremendous response to him. So I think it just really is captivating people's imaginations that somebody can come in and sort of just go among people and, you know, be himself, and people are responding to that, and they want to hear what he has to say, and they want to meet him personally.
Well, Brother Ed, I know people are going to want to ask you questions and give their views. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'd love to hear from all of you. Are you having fun at Siena?
I am. It's been a great opportunity. I've been involved in Catholic higher education most of my professional career at the other Franciscan college, as we call it, yeah. St. Bonaventure. But sure. I think being with young people on a campus is one of the most critical places in their growth life cycle to be able to influence them, not only to give them knowledge and skill, but really to give them a life orientation to who they want to be, the kind of persons they want to become. And so it's a unique place to be able to interact with them. And
have you talked to any of them about the Pope's visit?
Oh, yeah, no, there's a real level of excitement in terms of, you know, I go to the dining hall most days for lunch, for example, and sit with different students and whatnot, and they're obviously very curious, and we have some things set up on campus for students to view different kinds of events as a group, so there can also be discussion and whatnot around those kind of things. So it'll be an interesting few days, I think. There'll be a lot of distraction. People probably won't be as present in class as they should be.
Do you get to go to any of the stuff, either Washington or New York?
No, I won't be able to go myself, but Father Mark Reamer and Father Julian Davies are actually going to fly down to Washington, D.C. You know, Para Serra is the Franciscan missionary who's being canonized on Sunday at the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, and they were recruiting Franciscans to go. Father Julian just retired after 48 years of teaching, So that's one of his little treats is this trip to Washington.
Are you teaching a class?
I'm not teaching a class at the present time. I do some guest lectures. And
What is your subject?
Actually, my original subject is psychology. I'm a psychologist by profession. Professionally, I've gotten very much involved in the Franciscan intellectual spiritual tradition. So a lot of my work has really been in terms of integrating psychology and spirituality and theology and philosophy together in terms of, again, how does it help us to have a vision of life, and how does it help us to think about who we want to be, what kind of person we want to become. And so that's really been a lot of my personal life work has been in formation, education.
So if you were, I knew a guy who used to do communication theory by making you put yourself on a chart and then a grid. How far are you from this? So that he'd do, so how far are you from a GM car? You don't have to put that mm-hmm. down. How far are you from the Pope?
Oh, I'm pretty far down.
No, I don't mean in terms of your position, but I mean in terms of the philosophy that you were just articulating so well.
I guess I find a great attraction to him. I think when he was elected Pope, he tells the great story about you know, the process of they vote and they call out each ballot individually. And so at a certain point, he knew he would be elected.
Wow.
And he talks about the fact that his friend, a Franciscan cardinal from South America, was sitting next to him. And Cardinal Humes put his hand on his knee and said, "Don't forget the poor." And he tells later that that's when he decided he would take the name Francis.
What is the significance of Francis?
Well, I think that was another big surprise. Everyone just presumed it was Francis Xavier, the great Jesuit, and that turned out to be Francis of Assisi.
Tell us just a little bit about Francis of Assisi.
Well, again, he's the son of a merchant in the beginning of the 13th century. A lot of political, social, economic turmoil is going on. As you know, the feudal system is going down. His father wants him to become a merchant and to be successful like he is. Francis goes through a period of really questioning and doubting whether or not that's what he wants to do. So his culture is all about power, possessions, property, and pecunia, which is the Latin for money. So I tell students when I teach them, these are the four P's, don't forget them.
That's great.
But he turns away from that and embraces a different form of life, and his choice is to be among people, to regard others as his brother and his sister. And he lives below the city of Assisi, outside of the stone walls, and he really offers an alternative way of being in the world. And he's captured the imagination of people for eight centuries, and I think Francis is a model for Pope Francis in terms of, you know, that's really how he was living down in Argentina as the bishop, archbishop, and how he's living as the Pope. So I'm very excited about that.
He has an ability to speak truth to power, but not to insult, doesn't he?
Yeah. And I think, again, he's speaking out of the depth of his faith and his conviction and his understanding of, for example, the value and the dignity of every single person. And that becomes an incredible lens through which he looks at so many situations. So he talks about mercy, he talks about forgiveness, he talks about understanding, because he recognizes the human reality is that everyone is not living the ideal, and that's for a whole lot of different reasons. Or society and the structures of society sometimes have kept people in situations of poverty and whatnot. So he's moving out of that basic conviction about the dignity of the person, and then how do we as a society reverence that and honor that. And so he's able to challenge people in very subtle ways, but clear
now,
ways.
Now, I don't want to misquote him, and you'll, I'm sure, correct me, and I invite you to do so. But he did say something about philosophy versus treating people when he was in Cuba. And some people took it as a hit on the, you know, the communist orientation of Cuba. But I couldn't. But I mean, the church obviously has a philosophy and has had philosophies. So I couldn't quite parse that for myself. I wonder if you could take a crack at it.
Well, I don't know exactly the quote what he said, okay. But I think he sees that, you know, there are all kinds of social, political, economic ideologies, and I think what he's constantly saying is step back from the ideology and again look at it in terms of we're human beings, we're a human family. What is the ideology doing to the human person, to us as communities?
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
For WAMC comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting A Chorus Line weekends October 9th through 25th at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. The 2015 Saratoga Showcase of Homes, benefiting two charities, Rebuilding Together Saratoga and Habitat for Humanity, weekends through October 4th, saratogashowcaseofhomes.com for tickets. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers, nature.org/Adirondacks. And Capital Wine, corner of State and Lark Streets in the heart of Albany, offering local, domestic, and international wines, spirits, and special orders. Tastings Friday, 6 to 9, CapitalWineAlbany.com.
And we are back, and with Brother Ed Coughlin, who is the president of Siena, and it is a pleasure and an honor to have him here with us. Let's go to Laurel in West Park. Okay. Laurel, you're on. Go.
Hi. I have a question, or actually not so much a question as a comment. When I think of the Pope, Pope Francis, I think of him not so much as a reformer as he is a reminder. I think I feel that all the light has been shining on just one or two aspects of Catholic doctrine for a few decades now. And Francis is relighting everything so that when he talks about the poor and when he talks about compassion and he talks about perhaps not being qualified to judge, that he's reminding us of something that's always been in the doctrine but hasn't been getting a whole lot of attention.
Brother Ed?
I kind of like the way you put that, because I think that what he's doing is, and if you want to put it this way, maybe showing us a different face of the church.
Yes.
He's really going back, for example, to the pastoral constitution on the church in the modern world from Vatican II, where the church really adopted a very different stance in terms of its relationship with the world and said, you know, where peoples are with the hopes and dreams of the people, that's where the church wants to be. And again, he is following John 23rd, I think, in many ways in terms of his desire to really be much more attentive and present to people in the real challenging times of the current moment. And again, people try to continually bifurcate this in terms of, you know, doctrine, reform, those kind of things. I think he's really trying to emphasize some things that are at the heart of the message of Jesus and the gospel and have always been a part of the church. I think for a lot of people, for example, Catholic social teaching has been evolving over the last 100 years, for example, since Pope Leo XIII. And so, but many people are not aware of that because a lot of people have not spoken about that much. It hasn't been available.
That's true. It hasn't been available. And I think that to the what we can call Francis a reformer for is that it seems to me that anybody who is truly trying to follow Christ is going to have to be something of a reformer, of self first and then of the world.
Well, I think that's an important point, too. One of the things I think he's so appealing about and so engaging for is the fact that he is so authentic. I mean, you really feel this is a genuine human being who is comfortable in his skin. He's happy to embrace people, talk to people, and, you know, doesn't have that fear or reserve. You see him reaching out of the Popemobile to take a baby. That one Italian guy that ran up with the pizza someplace in Italy last year was right. It was like done in the papal colors. You know? So I think that the genuineness of the human being, and then he's a man of faith, and then he speaks out of deep conviction that has been grown and honed over a lot of long experience, and so
he reminds us of the preferential option for the poor.
I'm sorry, can somebody explain that to me?
He's of caring for the poor.
Oh, sure. Oh, got it.
First and foremost, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah. But Laurel, your question about reform is an interesting one. And, of course, for those of us outside, I had a program with Mario Cuomo for years, and he used to explain to me what some of the differences between doctrine, which Brother Ed just talked about, and dogma, were in terms of the rules. But do you, Brother Ed, see a time when women will be allowed to be in the clergy and doing what men do now?
Yeah, I think that was one of those questions. I mean, the tradition is a living tradition, and so the church is always trying to reflect on the questions and issues of the time and then figure out, you know, what is the best and most appropriate response. So I think that, you know, certain kind of questions and issues that might have been considered closed at one time are issues we've looked at in a new way. So, for example, even something like the death penalty. If you really think about the dignity and sanctity of every single person, you know, in an earlier time, we didn't have the possibility of putting that person in a place where they would not be able to harm someone else. So do we really have the right to take their life? And so it's like it's from the time of conception till the time of death, and all the life questions are embraced there. And you can't kind of pick and choose which ones you want to, you know, how do you become consistent about that? So I think that, you know, there's a lot of areas like that. So in a certain sense, you know, the church's thinking has changed, you know, that.
And Laurel, are you through? Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I am through, and thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Laurel.
And for having this program.
You're welcome.
Okay, we'll go to Mary Alice, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Lots of free phones. Give us your call. We really want to hear from you. Mary Alice, you're on.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. Sure. I was curious about your perspective on the fact that so many of the events, or actually all of the events in Washington, D.C., in New York are really closed to the public and require tickets compared to the events in Philadelphia. I've been lucky enough, I'm going down to Philadelphia for the papal events and was lucky enough to go online and get some of the tickets in Philadelphia that get you kind of closer to the stage, but all of the events in Philadelphia are pretty much open to the public. And I was just curious about your perspective on that.
Again, I think it's trying to figure out how do we manage these huge events. I understand each parish in the Diocese of Albany got one ticket to kind of raffle off. And so I think it's I lived in New York City around the corner from Madison Square Garden. It's sort of like, you know, how do we create an opportunity for a lot of people to get in here? You've heard the criticism, I think, that people got free tickets and then they were selling them for his passing through Central Park. So I think it's, again, all these systems are rather imperfect, but how do you create the opportunity for many people and some of the little people, less influential people, to have an opportunity to be in his presence? And so I think, you know, different places they've had to do that differently. Congressman Tungson called me last week and wanted to know if I would like three tickets for being on the lawn at the White House, because only 15,000 people are going to be able to get on the lawn. I couldn't go to D.C., so I have networked them down to other Franciscans. But so I think it's just more a matter of how are you practically going to manage this, especially when you're not able to, you know, accommodate. I think the tremendous response of people to go and see him is just overwhelming. And so even to get a glimpse of him for people is just a great thrill. And I've been in Rome myself for an audience or a canonization. And, you know, even if you can't get a seat in the audience there. So it's I think it's just a practical problem. And I know that Philadelphia has been tremendously open. A friend of mine is also the Secretary for Education down in Philadelphia, and he said he's lost his last hair trying to figure out how we're going to get all these buses into town. And so it's a great problem to have, I think, is how to give as many people as possible access and to somehow get that to the little people, people on the periphery, as we've been talking about, or the less influential types.
So, Mary Alice, let me ask you a question. You know, you're going to make a, you know, significant effort to get to see him. Why not watch him on television?
Well, I mean, I was really lucky when I was a little child in that I lived in Washington, D.C., and I got to see Pope John Paul II for the first time then. And then I've been very involved in youth ministry and got to go to World Youth Day in Toronto. And it's just such an amazing experience to be able to, as a Catholic, go and be surrounded by millions of your fellow Catholics and to celebrate your faith and to worship, you know, in the presence, not just of the Pope, but of so many other people who, you know, really believe and follow as you do. So it's a very uniting experience as well. Right. And especially for youth, for teenagers. And in addition to the one ticket you were mentioning that the parishes get within the diocese, there's also one ticket that's been given to a teen in each parish as well. So there's actually a busload of teenagers, and I think our diocese is the only one doing it, taking kids down to the Mass at Madison Square Garden on Friday. So it's a really amazing experience for young people as well. And with being so focused on the families, I think it's just an amazing experience.
Yeah. Well, I think your emphasis on the word experience is important here, because it's we sit in our houses and we watch all these kind of things on TV, and we think we've had the experience. I think it's really quite different.
Anybody who's ever been on a peace march knows different.
You know, it's quite different to be in St. Peter's Square when there's a canonization going on, mm-hmm. or I lived in Boston when John Paul II came there and went to the cathedral he had for religious. I also went to the Mass in the Commons when it was pouring rain and we were covered in mud. Yeah. So, but again, there was a joy and a spontaneity about that that, you know, okay, so what? Stop thinking about all the things you think are important, like I got to be dry and how am I going to get home, and just go with it.
a good answer. Mary Alice, great call. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Hey, you know what I'm telling you right now is you got a chance to get in, and I can guarantee you that the next person who calls will absolutely be on the phone within a second. 1-800-348-2551. I want you to feel free to express your views, ask your questions, and see what we can come up with. Brother Ed, what's the difference between being a brother and a father? In your profession?
Francis basically was trying to discern his life, and he felt attracted to live the gospel. He's kind of amazed that others came to join him, and he kind of originally thought that maybe he should start rebuilding churches. So he rebuilt three churches, and other people came to join him, and then he formed a brotherhood, and the Order of Franciscans is really called the Order of Friars Minor, Lesser Brothers. And some of those brothers are ordained and do sacramental ministry in the church. Others of us are simply members of the order. And historically, the church, the order became very clericalized, so the majority of the brothers were also priests, but we're equal in the community. And we.
Well, are you?
No.
You're not?
No, I'm not a priest, and I don't do sacramental ministry in the church.
So you don't do those things?
No, I don't say Mass. I don't hear confession, those kind of things.
Isn't that interesting?
I got more than enough to do.
Well, that's
no, great. No, it's a distinct vocation, and Again, it's not well known, so it's a kind of a surprise to people, even students on campus.
I noticed that your predecessors were larger than you are.
In more ways than one, right?
Yeah, right. I met them, and they were great guys, but they were big men, and you're more diminutive. Do you work out?
Not really. I've just been blessed with good Irish genes, and so my age doesn't show on my face, and my sisters are jealous. My hair isn't as gray as theirs and all those kind of things. So.
Great. Let's go to Charles in Goshen. Okay, Charles, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I just wanted to take an opportunity to say to Brother Bob, as the president of Siena, I have two children that are actually currently students there now. One is a junior, and she was able to convince her brother that he should join the Siena family as well, and he's there. And the experience that they're having thus far has just been tremendous.
What do you like about it?
Well, you know what I like most about Alan is the way they seem to be in tune with the students. You know, I have a lot of friends whose kids went to school at the same time, and just orientation alone, a lot of schools really didn't do much for the students at orientation time. They just kind of, you know, they moved in and they waited 3 or 4 days before classes started, and these kids were kind of sitting around looking for something to do, and Siena did the opposite. Siena kept them busy, you know, kept them doing things, showing them things around the area, teaching them about the college and, you know, what to expect. And it was really, it's a tremendously positive experience. I was hoping, though, Brother Bob, being that I have two in at the same time.
Brother Ed.
I'm sorry, Brother Ed. Sorry. That you know, I just blew my chance. I was going to say maybe a little reduction in the tuition.
No ticket for you.
Yeah. Forget the ticket. Just a little reduction in the tuition there. You know, maybe, pay one full price, the other one half price, something like that. But it didn't work out. So
Charles,
I just wanted to really say thank you.
Charles, all the
thank
phones
you.
Are ringing. We want to get to
tell
everybody.
Your son and daughter, say hello to me, okay?
I certainly will. Thank you.
Great.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Charles. Okay, we've got a Mike in Albany. Mike, you're on.
Hello?
Hey, Mike, you're on.
Thank you. Calling to ask Brother about Francis's position on animals. In his description of St. Francis, he left off St. Francis's affinity for various animals, and it's noted throughout history that that's what he had. And I'm just wondering if the Pope has any designs on showing sort of kindness to animals, especially when you have all kinds of problems with the way they're treated in this world. And I'm also wondering if the Pope would like a dog. I could see him walking around with a border collie.
Interesting that you say that, and I'm going to let Brother Ed answer the question himself. But he was asked by a child, I think, whether or not animals had souls. And I think he said yes. Which had been somewhat of a debate. Brother Ed?
I won't take on the question about a dog at the Vatican. However, I think that if you read, for example, his encyclical on the care of our common home, creation, I think he really articulates a beautiful vision that very much is, and the whole title of this, Laudato Si, is really taken from Francis of Assisi and his Canticle of the Creatures. Be praised, my Lord, and it's thankfulness for everything that's been created. And so I think that he's always been an inspiration for his, in that way. And I think that St. Bonaventure, for example, in his life of St. Francis, has this beautiful reflection on the fact of, it's the virtue of pietas. It's very difficult for us to translate exactly into English, but a Franciscan scholar said the best way to talk about it is right relationship. Relationship with God, with self, with neighbor, with the world. And so he talks about the fact that Francis grew in the virtue of pietas because he knew that all creatures had the same origin as himself. And so he called them all by the name a brother and sister. So if you read the encyclical, you'll see this whole thing of the earth, life, creation is a gift, and it's been given to all, and we're to care for all persons and all things.
Hey, Mike, great question, great answer. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Lynn in Northampton. Okay, Lynn, I'll tell you what, Lynn, you got about 2 minutes here. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll make it quick. I was struck as I was listening to NPR this morning about the Pope paraphernalia they were talking about and these incredible things that are stupid for sale, like the face on a piece of toast and the little doll that's holding a pretzel. Is that present in other countries, and are people speaking out about how that's so against what the Pope has been talking about with petty, trivial purchases and uses of resources?
Oh, I think, unfortunately, you see that around the world. It's really entrepreneurs and having a chance to make a few bucks and some of the most amazing things, not only that they come up with, that people actually buy them. I mean, it's just, it's not the best side of all these things. I mean, it's an opportunity for some people to try to make a few bucks, and that's not at all what Francis is about. And
Lynn, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Zach, we'll take a short break. 6 or 7 seconds. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Saratoga Saddlery, Saratoga Springs, New York, an equestrian lifestyle boutique featuring cowboy boots by Lucchese and Ariat for women, men, and kids. On Facebook and SaratogaSaddlery.com. The Hyde Collection, Glens Falls, this summer featuring the late drawings of Andy Warhol, 1973 to 1987. Organized by the Andy Warhol Museum, one of the Carnegie Museums of Pittsburgh. HydeCollection.org. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. H. Houst & Son True Value Hardware and Just Ask Rentals, Woodstock, locally owned since 1932, featuring Benjamin Moore paints, tools, and materials for home maintenance. Behind every project is a true value, hhoust.com. And Curran Compliance Services, Inc., Greenwich, New York, and now in St. Paul, Minnesota. National compliance and regulatory consultants for the life insurance industry. CurranCompliance.com.
And we are back with Father, Brother Ed Godwin. And Brother Ed, again, I want to thank you for being here and taking the time to do this. I know how busy you are. We'll go get some more phone calls. Let's go to Eli. Okay, Eli in Utica. You're on, Eli.
Hi, Alan.
Hi.
You know, I'm interested in the political side of the Pope's visit. I was brought up in the Catholic faith. My educators always stress the Sermon on the Mount. Year after year, they seem to stress, you know, Christ's affection for the poor, for the lesser of us. I kind of don't see that in our Republican Party Catholic members, our Catholics on the Supreme Court, John Boehner. They seem to have been taught by different educators in the Catholic Church. Certainly the Pope, we know in the arena of abortion where he stands. But if he were to vote in one of our elections, I would see him as a Bernie Sanders Democrat. What do you think? Am I way off base?
Well, again, I think if you understand the kind of background he's coming out of in Argentina and repressive regimes and all those kind of things and really trying to speak up for people. And again, the absolute importance of respecting the dignity of people. I think in Cuba, you know, the little that I've seen of that, again, it's really giving little people such encouragement. They've been in a very repressive situation, had very limited opportunities to grow and mature humanly, economically, socially, politically. And so, you know, he's, I think, trying to walk a very fine line about not taking on and, you know, but he's trying to liberate people. I mean, to liberate people from the shackles of some kind of ideology that kind of keeps people oppressed or keeps dividing people back and forth. And I think that it's always a great challenge for all of us to not only claim to have faith, but really to figure out what does that mean in terms of the concrete choices that I'm making today. And so I think the political, social, economic issues of our day are very much threatened by Catholic social teaching. Talk about, you know, the respect for the person. Talk about the common good. Talk about subsidiarity, you know, trying to allow people on lower levels to make decisions. You know, those are, depending on your situation, can be very subversive. Our economic system is interested in profits. So what if I have to think about the common good? How does this choice affect others, not just me? So I think there's a lot of a back and forth around that, and people want to embrace them, but not too much. There's certainly been a lot of written about the fact that the economic thought of the joy of the gospel, the Pope's encyclical there, the whole economic philosophy there is very difficult for the American capitalist to think about.
So it'll be interesting, Eli, to see what goes on in Congress when he gets there, right?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I tell you, one arena where I could definitely see the Pope admonishing our five Supreme Court justices is in the area of the Citizens United. I definitely know where he would have come down on that vote.
Well, I'm glad you have the inside track there, Eli. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Okay. Let's go to Andrew. By the way, folks, there's now some lines. They were all being used a little while ago, but now they're open. Let's go to Noreen in Sagandaga. Okay. Noreen, you're on.
Okay. Well, thank you for having Brother Coughlin on. I would like to... representing the gay community. I have three gay sons, and in the last 15 years, we've been very active for the gay rights of all people and rights of all people, but we've been very disappointed in the Roman Catholic Church about inclusion. I have worked and marched with St. Francis Xavier Parish in New York City. It'd be interesting to hear how Brother Coughlin meets with the students that are gay at Siena, and if there is a place for them. I know there's certainly a place for the table in our house for them, but I was disappointed that the Pope isn't going to address that. From what I understand, he's not going to address these issues because there's many Roman Catholic gay families, you know, families that have gay and lesbian children.
No, and I certainly understand how difficult this has been for you and your sons, for example, in terms of understanding and acceptance. I think that for me, we have to really, as Catholics, go back to the whole idea in the Judeo-Christian tradition about, you know, we're made in the image of God. St. Augustine helped us to understand that that image was not so much in our physicality, but it's really in our intellect and our affect and our freedom with respect to choice. You have an admonition, a beautiful admonition from St. Francis, for example, where he says, be conscious of your dignity, of the wondrous way in which God made you. Now, some people don't like the way I've been made because I was just told I was pretty small compared to my predecessor, for example.
That was a compliment, sir.
I didn't have a choice about that. So I think even beyond that, there's a principle from the Franciscan philosopher John Duns Scotus at the beginning of the 13th century. Principle of individuation, hechetas, you are this person and no other, and you're unrepeatable. And so it's just a beautiful thought that how do we accept every person as God created them? And our culture and social world has not always, because of various kinds of things, has not always been able to think that through and all the implications. So, you know, we certainly are accepting of have a place on our campus for gay and lesbian students who need a safe place to be able to talk, have support, encouragement. Again, we need to help them become conscious of their dignity.
Now, okay, well, we could go down that road, but let's just ask about, you know, the very famous statement I'm sure Noreen is pointing to, which is, who am I to judge?
Right.
Yeah.
And so we were very hopeful when he said that. And actually, the Pope participated in the baptism of a child from a gay couple. I thought that was wonderful. And that was very hopeful. And then, whoops, I haven't heard anything else. You know, I look at the people. I look at two women come to mind, Jean Granick and Jean Prejean, in the Catholic Church. They might be excommunicated right now, but what they stand for, their courage in standing up for the rights of people.
You're thinking about Helen Prejean?
Yes.
Okay, that woman that did so much, the sister of St. Joseph that did so much in terms of Dead Man Walking. And again,
I met her in New York.
Respect for him. Yes. Or Jean Gramaic, I think her name is. She's a sister of that has done an awful lot of work with New Ways Ministry in Washington, D.C.
And again, She has.
The political climate has not been terribly accepting of that, but you see a tremendous amount of change. I think, you know, that our country is changing so quickly in terms of our attitudes towards gay and lesbians, transgendered persons. It's just a whole new reality that in a very narrow world in the past, people had very, very little understanding of the whole biology, how we're made, how we function, such a very limited understanding of sexuality that's almost limited to, you know, procreation and whatnot, and our sexuality is all about our ability to be in relationship. And so this is really opening up on all kinds of different levels, but the change and transformation is very slow. And I think the message of the Pope is the message of the Pope. We have to keep thinking about that, even though he doesn't talk about it every day.
Well, Brother Ed, very quickly, you said, Brother, that you used the word dignity, and I didn't know where you were going with that. I wonder if you could explicate a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think one of the most fundamental things in the Catholic Church is its belief in the absolute dignity of every single person, the worth and the value of every person. Right. And we have to respect that. And so when you begin with that ultimate principle, I don't have the right to take someone's life, for example.
If
a person is a gay person, I need to respect the fact that that's how they were created, that's how God made them, and I'm called to love them as they are. I'm not called to ask them to change.
I'm with you. Okay, Noreen, thank you for calling. Appreciate it very
much. You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, and now we will go to David in New Hampshire, who has a fascinating question. David?
Hi. I'm sorry if it, I don't mean it to come off insulting, but I was just wondering how, if the Pope is elected by a group of men, that he then has the authority to speak for God once he's elected. I'm going to hang up and listen to your call.
No. Don't do that.
That's all right, David. That's fine. I don't think he claims to speak for God. I mean, I think, he has an authority in the church, and it's the highest authority. Ideally, it's all the bishops of the world speaking together. I think he's having a synod on the family, for example, because he wants the whole church to be in a conversation about the family, the importance of the family as the building block of society. At the same time, he's very conscious of the fact that we have many problems in families, and how do we address them? So I don't think he pretends to be speaking for God. I think he's trying to be as a man of faith, as honestly and authentically as he can, address reality of the situation and speak the truth. And the demands of love that come from the gospel are the absolute paramount measure of what we're choosing to do. So, and again, that has evolved and changed over time. We've had new insights. We've come to new understandings. And it's very difficult when you get into this is written in stone. There's very few actual dogmas of the church that have been solemnly proclaimed by the church that everyone must believe this. So, again, a lot of things are presented as dogma that really aren't dogma. And the church always has got to go back to what are the central beliefs? Those are in the creed. And we work from there.
David, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. The next person who calls gets on the air, 1-800-348-2551. Brother Ed, what about this business of the sexual scandals that have happened in the church? How has this Pope ameliorated that? What's his approach been to this?
Well, again, I think that it's just very hard to understand the depth of this crisis and the fact that, abuse has taken place and it went unchecked and unknown. And again, it's an issue of power and it wasn't adequately addressed or responded to. I don't think we really understand a person who's been abused, the incredible impact of that on them. Whoever the abuser is, I think it becomes especially grave in the situation of a priest, a religious, a trusted person in the church that, you kind of assume that I can trust this person. So I think that has caused a certain amount of real crisis for people in terms of how could that happen. And again, I think what is the church able to do to really heal that, to restore trust and to, again, to create a church which is, warm and welcoming and inviting, but where you're safe. And
it's been my impression that he's concerned about this and is trying to do something about it.
No, and I think that's why, Cardinal O'Malley from Boston is part of the central group of eight cardinals that are advising him, because Cardinal O'Malley is someone that was sent to Boston and worked in different places in terms of trying to heal this great tragedy and call for a more responsible kind of response in terms of how we relate to one another and protecting children and the accountability that's absolutely essential to that.
We'll go to Sergio in Colony. Sergio, you're on.
Hello, Alan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if Father could maybe help me out a little bit here. You know, I was raised Roman Catholic, and I follow the tenets that, you know, he's espoused today as far as, you know, we are our brother's keepers, etc. But I just don't seem to get a feel for that when someone says that they're a Christian. And a lot of the evangelicals, a lot of the, quote, reborn Christians, etc., seem to be falling in line with the Republican, you know, party and in chastising poor people. And I just want to get a sense of where's the delineation there between someone who, like myself, who is Roman Catholic and someone who's a Christian.
Well, I kind of share your problem, I guess, Sergio. I don't know what to say. I think that the, I mean, the gospel certainly does not justify excluding people, penalizing people, not caring about people.
So and I think, that's all that we seem to be getting from, you know, and I'm not trying to be overly political here, but it just seems to me that the people who belong to the Republican Party seem to be espousing just that.
Well, again, I think the things like the healthcare debate, we want to take care of everyone, but oops, it's going to cost us, and we don't know how to pay for it. We don't want to pay for it. So I think that, you know, all these are the practical issues. If you truly believe in the worth and the dignity of every person, how do we provide health care for them? And it's going to cost us as a society. So it's going to demand some sacrifices of us. It may require of us to put some limits on companies' ability to make profits on. I think there was a thing on today that some medication, the cost of it's gone up 5,000% or something like that.
That was unbelievable.
That was
distinctly unchristian.
Again, I think it goes back to this whole idea of Catholic social teaching about the dignity of the person and the common good. And how do you make decisions about that? And who gets the right to exclude some people from, you know,
getting a drug?
Yeah. If I'm at a, I'm from a blue collar family in Buffalo. My father was a dock worker and a fireman providing for us. We didn't know we were poor. You know,
you had a roof over your head. You had your clothes on your back. You had food on the table, but you did look after your neighbor, and you did, you know, or you were willing to make the sacrifices because we were all in this together. And I just don't get a sense from the quote Christians. That's really not an important thing for them, and I'm just having a very difficult time understanding what Christian means then, I guess.
I share your concern, I guess. I would hope that they wouldn't be using that label for themselves if those are the kind of choices they're making or those are the kind of attitudes they're espousing.
I like that. Hey, so thank you, Sergio. Jim, you have 1 minute here. Let's go. 1 minute. What do you got? Jim. Oops. Jim, are you there?
Hello?
Hey, Jim, you got 1 minute. Go ahead.
Okay, I got in trouble back in high school many years ago because of religion class, and the priest that was teaching us senior religion got into a discussion of the spirit of poverty, and I got into trouble by talking about rotund bishops and chauffeur-driven ones, etc. I'm glad to see Francis come back again. It seems like what I've been waiting 40 years to come around has finally come around, and I'm happy about it. I haven't. Kind of a fallen away Catholic, but I'm very interested in what this
Jim, we're going to have to leave it at that because we're out of time. I thank you so much for that comment. Appreciate it very much, okay?
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. That's all the time we have on today's Vox Pop program. Our thanks to Brother Ed Coughlin from Siena College for being with us today. Thanks to all of our callers. Sorry if you didn't make it through. You can always drop us an email, share your thoughts at voxpop@wmc.org. Thanks to Zachary Malloy at the controls, to Susie Chekai for answering the phones, and to our producer, Jessica Blaustein. Marshall support comes from Haydenville Woodworking and Design, a group of artisan designing and building renovations, additions, new homes, custom cabinets, and furniture for over 30 years. HaydenvilleWD.com for virtual portfolio, upstate divorce mediation, specializing in divorce mediation and collaborative divorce, helping couples who are seeking legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill. UpstateDivorceMediation.com, and from the Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, celebrating its fifth anniversary with a performance by Jazz Band Plus Joshua Redman, by The Jazz Band plus Joshua Redman, Friday, October 23rd at 8 p.m., skidmore.edu/ZANKEL, and the 1850 House and Tavern, Rosendale, New York, a neighborhood tavern with a waterfront deck and porch on Main Street. Local spirits and pizza from their clay oven, the 1860house.com. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.